We're your health and safety angels, Daisy Silcock
and Lindsay Mason. Health and safety.
Busting the barriers.
Welcome back to another episode of Health and Safety Angels. This week we've got another regulation discussion, but not with myself, Lindsay Mason and Daisy. I've got a special guest, so I've got Ashley Evans with me, who is our first aid specialist. Welcome, Ashley.
Hello.
So what do you do? What's your role?
I am a health and safety consultant and a first aid instructor for a business in North Wales called Shawcliffe Training. I specialise in teaching first aid qualifications, ranging from children's first aid to adults' first aid, forestry first aid, and lots of other ones in between all of that.
So do you carry out consultancy services for businesses with first aid, or is it just the training?
All of the above, really. I do all of them. I do consultancy as well, and I also teach the qualification itself as well.
So if I was a small business and I wanted support with first aid, I could contact you and discuss my needs within the business?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah, more than welcome.
Okay, and then also if they wanted any form of first aid training?
Yes, absolutely. So we do offer the one-day, the three-day courses and other little courses in between, from paediatric for children and the forestry first aid as well, for the more heavy-duty stuff as well.
Okay. So this episode really is to break down what is required from a business in terms of any regulation, but we're focusing today on first aid. Now, I don't know if you've listened to episodes before, but we talk about health and safety jellyfish, with the Health and Safety at Work Act being the big boss, and then the tentacles underneath are individual regulations. So what is this regulation officially called?
Well, this is the Health and Safety First Aid Regulations set in 1981. Or as some will call it, the old 74 regulation, which has had a few updates.
Ah, so that's the code for the approved codes of practice book.
That's it, yeah.
So we've also discussed the law itself, but also that we've got some great guidance books. So the health and safety first aid regulations are supported by the L74.
That's correct, yeah.
What's the basis of the first aid regulations? What are they telling us that we have to do?
Well, you know, we tell our candidates in the course is that lovely little poster states on section 7 of it, where providing the adequate facilities for the workplace. And I think that's quite key, that people need to understand that it is adequate for their workplace, because it can be quite bespoke. So the first aid regulation really helps people understand what that may be, from equipment to the appointed person to specific training, and obviously the number of staff within that as well. So it's quite good in that sense.
So every single business would have to look at it individually. There's nothing to say this is a standard. For example, a first aid kit, would that be different for every business based on what they do and who they employ?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So how I deliver that course would be, I range it from low risk to high risk work, as an example, from an accountant to a construction worker, because of the risk elements that they're in. Not only have they got to look at different types of courses, they've also got to look at different types of first aid kits and where they're situated. That's also quite important as well. There's no set distance when it comes to a first aid kit, but being within arm's reach when you're using machines like chainsaws, steel saws, and angle grinders, they are quite important that they are situated, importantly, as they are the contents of them as well.
Okay, so within arm's reach, that's not a legal requirement, is it? Is that what you would say is a sensible location?
Yes, I would definitely say that. To look at the types of injuries you could get from types of machines, if you were to have a catastrophic bleed or a life-threatening bleed, you need that kit there and then. No point having it 400 metres away. You need it on you. Obviously, that's in that setting. In a setting in a place like, you know, an office, as an accountant, say, you can be a little bit more flexible. So the guidance is there to sort of help them. That's exactly what it says in the tin. It's a guidance.
So we are going to focus on regulation 3, 4, and 5. And there's also some support information that comes with it. So if I've got the regulations here. So regulation 3, section 1 says, an employer shall provide or ensure that there are provided such equipment and facilities as are adequate and appropriate in the circumstances for enabling first aid to be rendered to his employees if they are injured or become ill at work.
Yeah.
So when we talk about equipment and facilities that are adequate and appropriate, how would you break that down into normal language?
Again, it would depend on the risk of the workplace. So I tend to tell people on the courses that if you use the word adequate, would a standard first aid kit containing a couple of safety pins and a couple of bandages be adequate for the potential use of a machine like a chainsaw? You know, redeeming it not to be adequate, then you need to go above and beyond that, your normal first aid kits, and start looking at things like the tourniquets, the hemostatic granules and dressings. And tourniquets were reintroduced onto the shop floor rings in 2015. So they've been about for a while. But this has to be decided by the employees and the employers what's rendered to be adequate for their types of injuries. After the courses as well, which is quite a common theme I get with first aid.
You said you provide the courses to use tourniquets?
Yeah. So we will go through the use of a tourniquet. We'll go through the safe use of a tourniquet, I should say, as well as the safe use of hemostatic dressings and granules, which is like a powder form to stop the life-threatening bleed. And we will go through that. And we've got an awarded body certification to do this as well through the First Aid Awards. So there's, and it's been around for, like I say, nearly 9 years now, the tourniquet being back in use. It was originally taken off the shelf because of the fears of how it was being used, and now those fears have been alleviated with proper training and proper guidance.
What did they say to use instead?
They didn't, to be honest with you. It was about managing the situation and managing the risk within the workplace. There was concerns of originally of using the tourniquet, developing like CO2 within the blood, causing them toxic buildup of blood, and then once released, because at the time years and years ago we were told, telling people to time the length of the tourniquet being on the person. And then we've now realised that you can have a tourniquet on a limb for up to 2 hours before the risk of losing a limb is in the red zone. So it's...
Wow. So I wonder if taking that out of the situation actually made things worse. Did they prove that not having it actually was an increased risk?
Yeah, 100%. Looking at, you know, my background is I am ex-forces, and looking at what we did in places like Afghanistan and Iraq, and using the knowledge that we were using out there and doing it out there, I think the Resuscitation Council, where we get our guidance for first aid when it comes to how we treat, watched it, looking at reintroducing this tourniquet in a controlled, or if we put it, rendered to be useful in a high-risk environment.
So we've got to have the adequate and appropriate facilities and equipment, but then going on to subsection 2 of regulation 3, it then says that you have to provide or ensure that there is provided such a number of suitable persons as it's adequate and appropriate in the circumstances. Is there a legal amount of 1 day trained, 3 day trained, high risk trained, anything in the law that says what you should have?
No, this is the big all my courses, I must have this nearly every course I run. The guidance uses the phrase, as an example, if you work in a low-risk environment, they say, and you've got fewer than 25 staff, they will say you require at least one qualified member of staff trained. Well, obviously, the key phrase in that sentence is at least one, not one. We have to take in consideration, obviously, holidays, any sick, any courses, off-site, on-site work. So people misinterpret that as being one, when in fact it's not. It's at least one. You need as many as you possibly can. And like I say, also choosing the right course, that's a massive, massive problem across industry, in my industry, people not necessarily selecting the right course for their job. Is a huge, huge problem. People just think, oh, one day is enough. When in fact, you know, the risk they've got for particular injuries isn't covered in the one day, it's covered in other courses.
Well, I guess there's one side of it where people don't understand. There's another side where sometimes you try and get the minimum possible because obviously it's going to cost to train people.
Absolutely.
How does somebody define if they're low, medium or high risk, do you think?
I think they need to look at their equipment that they're using, you know, what the actual risk, you know, the famous, I go as far as reading practicable comes in it when it comes to choosing what course I do and what risk I've got in front of me. And I think it's looking at, you know, from a constructionist point of view, you're operating heavy machinery, so there's a higher chance of high risk. You know, going back to office staff, what's the likelihood of you dealing with a catastrophic bleed? You know, you've got to weigh up your options of what you've got in front of you.
Okay, so if I wasn't sure if I needed a paediatric course, is there a specific age that makes something a paediatric course?
We use the guidance of up to 18 years of age, so it would depend on their awarding body that they want to do the first aid through, but most awarding bodies will say 18 years of age up to for a child of 18 years of age.
Okay, so if I had an apprentice that was under 18, I may have to consider that as a course as well.
Yeah, well, you've got to take of the famous saying, common sense, into a little bit of it as well. I mean, if the child is 17 today, first aid course is tomorrow, but they're 18 next week, you could get away with down the lines of sitting an adult's first aid course. But if they're 16 today, 17 today, and the first aid course is next year, then you've got to have a kind of weight up a little bit.
Okay. So we've section one, we've looked at section two. Section three says where a person provided under section two is absent, which is what you've just said, we've got to make sure that we've got someone that can cover that person. So it's not just about having that one person. You have to make sure that we have someone that can fully cover if that person is off.
Absolutely.
And it says it would be adequate and appropriate if instead of a person for rendering first aid, there was a person appointed to take charge.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So the person who's a nominated person to take charge of the first aid facilities would be somebody who's qualified. And in their role, they will take charge of looking at the first aid kits, whether they're in date, whether they're adequate for their risk in their job place, whether they've been restocked, if once they've been used, whether they're in appropriate areas. That kind of line is there. That's their role, basically.
Okay, so really making sure that the admin side of it is sorted.
Yeah. They're usually the lead person, the person you want in the business who's going to be the more competent and confident in a first aid situation as well.
Okay, we've got section five then talks about any first aid room provided shall be easily accessible to stretchers and to any other equipment needed to convey patients to and from the room and be signposted. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so in a risk, high risk environment like a fracture injuries, then you'll need a facility such as a stretcher, such as a room, basically, that person can be treated in with a bit of dignity as well.
So it's, the sign says it's got to comply with health safety sign and signals regulations, which we haven't covered yet, but there are laws that state what kind of signage you have to have. So the guidance that follows Regulation 3 talks about a needs assessment. Is that something that is a fixed template, or is it just being able to show that you've thought about what you need?
It's a little bit of both, really, to be fair. Again, it depends on the environment. We tend to tell, the common question I get is, what's the need for a factory when it comes to, you know, numbers and kits and training rooms and illnesses and work and sort of stuff. I tend to tell people, a factory doing what? A factory making pillows or a factory making JCBs? You know, you've got to take into the risk that you've got in the environment you're in and the number of people you've got. The needs assessment is done per basis of company, not per standard setting. It's not easy to do either through a standard setting.
Is there a template that people can find for a needs assessment?
I'm not 100% sure.
I'll have to have a little look. If I was thinking about the one-day first aid course, which is called the Emergency First Aid at Work, what kind of stuff do you cover?
So the one-day course through the awarded body system is you cover CPR, which is just your basics of giving life support, and then you'll cover choking drills, you'll cover recovery position, minor wounds, cuts and grazes, and you'll also cover seizures. And the body position is also thrown into that as well, and burns.
So then what's the difference between that and the 3-day?
So the 3-day then, which the 1-day first aid course is usually the day one of the 3-day, and then the day two, day three of the 3-day course we'll cover subjects like day two is you've got spinal injuries, you've got head injuries, you've got fractures and sprains and strains, you've got crushed injury. The crushed injury itself is quite a large element. I mean, I do quite a massive practical on that with the guys outside, using a lot of fake scenarios and fake gloves, teaching them, especially on site for construction site work, how they deal with it.
Now, I know it might be gruesome, but I think I love that. I think that it really makes it real rather than just being reading off a page, because I guess it's not every day that people are coming across this kind of thing. You could probably be trained 10 different times and you've never had to deal with something.
Absolutely.
Do people ever say that doing those practicals helps them to really understand it?
Oh, 1,000,000%. They always laugh at me when I tell them on the first day to come into work, come into the course tomorrow wearing some old clothes, and they will see what's going on, and they turn up and they'll get covered in fake blood.
Oh, I want to come to one of your courses.
And then we use, when we can, we use where we can, some of the staff here to pretend to be shock fitters and run around the building pretending to be shock. We try and make it as realistic as we possibly can, without going over the top, obviously.
Yeah. But I guess that brings a cost to you as well, right? So it's easy for someone to put on a basic course with a slideshow. Mm. But for me, I'm very big on quality training. I know everyone has a budget, and they have to, you know, we have to take cost into consideration because people have got to make a profit to survive. But to invest in something that makes it more realistic has got to pay back so much more if something goes wrong, right?
1,000,000%. But you know, the famous arguments in health and safety and the moral, legal, financial thing. I, as cheesy as it might sound, I always say with this course particularly, money shouldn't really be an object. This is the one course you can say the phrase, I am quite literally going to be saving your life, and do this wrong. It's a lot of pressure on somebody. So for me, quality over quantity is key. Maybe I'm biased over that one because I teach the course. I don't know. But to me, yeah, 100%. 100%. You need to have the quality of training.
I think maybe you're biased as well because you see the difference it makes, and unless people have actually experienced sitting in a classroom and learning from a piece of paper and experienced learning and actually, you know, having fake blood included, I think you will clearly see the value. And I think sometimes, you know, people don't think about it. There's so much when you're running a business that you've got to think about. First aid is really just one of those pieces. So I think it's good to hear that those options are available. Then people are a bit more thoughtful about it and may, next time they come to book a course, think, let me give something different a shot.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about the people? I can imagine that businesses go, I'll pick you, and you. But do you think it is a big part of complying to choose the right people in your business to be the trained first aiders?
Yes and no. I think if it's a job requirement, I think if you're a user of a piece of equipment, I think using the chainsaw as an example, I think if you're a person who uses that piece of equipment, I think you have to be prepared to potentially one day treat that type of injury, because you've already chosen that line of work. So choosing the right person, yes you do, no point being somebody who's quite squeamish at the fucking door when you're not that kind of person. But also you've got to remember the job that you are now putting yourself through, that one day if that was you, you have to be prepared that you may have to step up to the plate and do yourself what other people. I think that's quite important, that they understand.
In the needs assessment, we're talking here about physical first aid, which is going to be one thing where, you know, if you faint when you see blood, may not be the best person to do it. But also we've had a big change recently where we're recognising mental health as well. Would you say that it's something that to think about different types of people? So rather than just saying first aid covers both physical and mental health, to actually split it into two sections, or do you think, you know, they go together?
Well, from a course perspective, they are two separate courses entirely. I also deliver the mental health, there's the three courses that we deliver. You've got the half day awareness course, the one day, which is mainly aimed at the management, and then you've got the 2 day supervisor course. They are separate courses entirely. I try my best to incorporate as much mental health prep, I think the right word is, for it, to prepare these people that there could be days where you will be given something CPR and it will inevitably, unfortunately, affect you and them, whether it's a good or bad outcome. So I do agree with you. I think it has to be mentioned. The problem is with these courses, the first day, the 1 day, the 3 day, they are so compact with content, extremely difficult to put more in at the moment. or something.
So it's not a case of a company saying, oh, well, we've booked everyone off for a one-day first aid course. Can we add in a section on mental health? Because there's just not physically enough time.
There's just not enough time. I mean, the one-day course is literally that. I mean, I sat a one-day course today, and you're pushing for time, even just the contents that you're already delivering. The time's against you. And also, knowledge of first aid starts deteriorating. So at the moment, we discuss it on the course for about 40 minutes on the mental health side. And I tend to use other candidates' experiences because, you know, listen to the same voice droning all the time. I ask the questions to them, like, who's actually given first aid? And then I let them tell people what it was like because it makes it more real.
So what's the, when we're talking about people or skills fading, what's the renewal on both of the physical first aid courses?
Okay, so the one-day and the three-day course, they are a three-year qualification and they need resitting every 3 years. The three-day course, within 3 years' time, you then sit a two-day requalification. So it's basically the 3 days crammed into two. The one-day course, you would just sit a refresher every 3 years. Although HSE do recommend that everyone sits a form of an annual refresher. What that refresher may be is up to the company. You know, we've had before where companies have contacted us and spend a couple of hours teaching them refreshing them basic life support, which is just CPR. Or we've come along and taught the forestry industry, like where I am, National Resources Wales. We've gone along and taught them how to, just to top them up again, how to use tourniquets and how to deal with catastrophic bleeds. Because to them, that's their biggest risk. But that's the annual refresher that HSE kind of want you to do.
Because it's one of those things where I always say you sit a course and people think that you walk out of there all knowing. And so a company will say, oh, well, you've sat a training course, you must be competent. But if you've sat a training course and it's been 2.5 years and you've not had to use any of those skills, I mean, roughly, if I had 100 people that I trained on a one-day first aid course, how many people out of those 100, after 2.5 years, do you think are going to remember how to sit someone after you found them and they're in shock or someone's had a heart attack and you know what to do?
Very few.
Do people say... Yeah. Do people say to you, like, I'm so glad I'm doing it again?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I had, the course I had running today was, I had four who were sitting and refreshing with me from 3 years ago. And one of them, which has actually, in that meantime, given the CPR to somebody.
Oh, wow.
And they've said themselves, when you're in the moment, it comes forward. But, there are always bits, you know, and there's changes. You know, the bandages changes. The bandages, how you use a bandage changes, and how long you keep it on for. There's always, always updates. Even people like myself, who are first aid instructors, we have to keep our continuous personal development updated constantly. We are always on it because of the changes.
So what's the change with the mental health element in terms of first aid? What's this new update?
So it's about preparing people or when you may have to give first aid. When the person that I said on the course who gave CPR to somebody, and he said himself, you know, you can do all these courses all your life, but doing it in a classroom and doing it real are two different things entirely. There's no emotion in the classroom, where the outside is bags of emotion. And he has said himself, since the event, he has struggled mentally to get his head around what happened that day. So it's about that, really. It's about preparing and looking from an employer's perspective. When you've got a member of staff who's given CPR, looking at signs of depression, anxiety, and stress. So it's a big, big subject right now.
Now, in terms of accident book and recording, is there any legal requirement for recording every single physical injury to someone?
Ideally, yes. We'd like to see accidents recorded so we can learn from our accidents. And to prevent them from happening again, that's the idea of accident reports. And obviously then we've got the Griddle incident book. It's a way of companies understanding where they may have gone wrong. You know, you'll never find the perfect workplace. There'll always be accidents. We're never perfect. So, yes, we want to learn how we've done these accidents. HSE wants to encourage you to do that so we can teach each other.
So moving on to the next regulation, this is now about the employer actually informing employees of the arrangements that they've... So they've done this needs assessment, they've decided on who they're going to have, how many they're going to have, what equipment is, where it's going to be put, who they're going to have the training with. Do you deliver courses about tailored information, or would you say that it's okay to sit down and have like a little briefing with people?
So when we deliver the course themselves, I spend about an hour on the legality side of it, beginning of the course, teaching people why they are here to teach, to do the course itself, what the reason behind them sitting in the chair in front of me for first aid, what it is that they're doing. And I've got to be honest with you, I'd say I have 100 people doing that. I have to be saying to them, very rarely do I get somebody saying, well, I don't want to do this.
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, very rare.
Because sometimes I'm surprised at what we get to hear, but that's so good. Yeah. I guess... first aid is one of those things that, so we don't talk about health and safety as much in schools, but first aid is a thing that you know about as a child. So it's probably a bit more inbuilt into being accepted.
Yes, I would agree with that. People still have this fear of first aid, being, you know, the old being sued for giving CPR, breaking people's ribs. You know, that's still within people's minds. And we're there to teach you to say, look, we're not, that's not going to happen. The Samaritans Act will cover us in that. And, you know, that's not going to happen. We want to take that fear away from people to say, at the end of the day, we're there to help you. And let's give it a go.
Right, right. Well, so the guidance document covers the regulations, and there's a lot more. It's pointless reading the book out. It's free to download on the HSE website. So, and everybody knows how to find the guidance documents, and it's so easy to understand. So everything is there about the actual regulations, but they also then have appendix sections. At the end of the book, with some tables. So, for example, I've got here record of first aid provision, and it actually gives a list of do you need someone that's an emergency first aid, someone with a longer certificate, anything specific, and also about your equipment and facilities so that you can tick them off. And one of those is a defibrillator, and I'm a big fan of defibrillators. Can you explain to us why we would want one in our workplace potentially?
It's probably the most fantastic piece of kit a first aider can have. It's quite literally a lifesaver. We're seeing more and more of this in sports like football and rugby at the minute, where players are suffering from cardiac arrests, and they can happen to anybody at any given time. It's an amazing piece of kit, and I would like to encourage everybody to get one where and when they can. Fortunately, that it's not.
Are they as easy to use as people say?
Absolutely, absolutely. The courses that we run, people are, again, petrified of them. I think they fear doing something wrong with, but you really can't. You just press go and listen to every single word that they tell you and talk you through it, and follow every single prompt. It literally is a guide for you. Just listen.
There is one problem that you may tell me I'm wrong, but I have heard that if I run my own business and let's say I've got 10 employees, so I decide to have a defibrillator installed in my premises. If I don't have it checked and 4 or 5 years later we come to need it, and it actually doesn't work, I can get in trouble as the employer for having it and it not working.
Absolutely. So this would come to them, the pure res, because it's a piece of equipment within the workplace. So it needs to be constantly maintained and updated. There are engineers that go around and do this, cost, and they will maintain it just as you would a pack testing of a piece of equipment, maintaining it. Because in some brands and defibs, their plans expire, they lose their stickiness in the back of them, so they can expire. So we need to keep them updated the best as we can.
I guess that's the same as a first aid kit, right? Absolutely. Plasters can't, I know plasters don't last forever, because my first aid kit at home, you know, we all have that medicine basket. I swear I've got plasters from when I was about 3 years old, which is quite a long time ago. So on Appendix 2, it actually talks about first aid kits. So it says, and it's put it in bold, there is no mandatory list of items to be included in a first aid container. The decision on what to provide will be influenced by the findings of your needs assessment. So it's not a case of going out to the supermarket and buying yourself a first aid kit. You do have to make sure that you've got the right things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Is there anywhere that's a good place to buy them from that you know? Is it better to go to a specific first aid company? Or
the only advice I can give to people when it comes to purchasing first aid kits is shop around. Don't go and buy in a bulk as you can see on that appendix too, where it's saying things that, you know, buy sterile tweezers and so on, so on. When you're buying it, look at the individual pieces. As an example, if you want to buy a tourniquet, buy them individually. You might find it a bit more cost effective. Create your own first aid kit that is that bit for you. It might be cheaper to do something like that. But again, as we say, the only thing we're not allowed in our first aid kits is medication, unless you are bench qualified, but you are not allowed.
Okay, so you couldn't have paracetamol in a first aid kit for if people get headaches?
No medication is allowed in first aid kits. Only what the list gives you here, only a doctor or a dispense qualified individual is allowed to dispense medication.
Wow, that's a great bit of information. So everyone has to have their own medication and make sure they take their own medication.
Absolutely,
and not other people's.
Yeah, absolutely. The grey area in this one currently is aspirin. And obviously when it comes to allergies, you've got your anaphylaxis pen, known as the Jax or EpiPen. And they are prescribed to the individual. And there is a course known as the anaphylaxis course, where the companies can go on the course and teach their staff how to use those anaphylaxis pens.
Okay, so if you knew one of your staff members had a severe allergy and had the pen, you could actually have a training course to make sure that all of your staff knew how to deal with that member of staff?
Absolutely, yeah. Duty of care, and that comes in as well. You know, we've got a common theme with one of those allergies, peanuts. We've had before with peanut allergies, even, you know, airborne peanut allergies. We've got a duty of care to make sure that everyone understands the risk of that person, and then hopefully show the staff if and when, hopefully not, we need to treat that person. We can do it by doing the anaphylaxis course.
So let's say we did our assessment, we've decided on all the kit, we know exactly where it's going, we informed everybody of where it is and what it's for, and everyone's had their first aid training. What are the rules now on checking and all that stuff? Is there a set amount of time, like when you're talking about fire alarm testing, there's guidance that says how often it should be done. Do we have that with first aid equipment?
So your appointed person needs to be informed when and if a piece of equipment is being used in the first aid kit within the workplace. If you are that appointed person, then I'd recommend to do, again, not set guidance in this, but recommend to check it regularly. You know, do it like with your fire alarm testing, if you like. So it becomes a regular thing. But there's no set guidance when it needs to be checked, as long as it's still within date.
Oh, and what kind of expiry dates do these things have on them?
They vary from manufacturer to manufacturer, but most expiry dates of most bandages range from 3 years. And some bandages, known as hemostatic dressings, that come in a vacuum seal, can be up to 8 years. So that you need to have a quick good look at what you've got.
Are there any set way of recording that you've done the checks?
Yeah, so with your first aid assessments, you do your spreadsheets on them. You can make a spreadsheet of what you've got. But to say a set date, quite difficult, because obviously one manufacturer will say 3 years and the manufacturer will say 5 years.
Right.
It's down to that. Although, you know, as it states in the appendix two, which is under 859, that's just the basic first aid kit. If you're working at a higher risk, you'll need another kit on top of that.
Well, I always say to people, imagine yourself standing in front of a judge having to justify your actions. If you said, oh yeah, we checked our first aid kit every 5 years, you'd probably feel a bit embarrassed.
If you blend it in with your fire alarm testing, you kill two birds with one stone, you don't forget what you do.
And the person that does the checks, should they have been on a training course?
Ideally, yes. You want someone who's competent, ideally someone who knows what they're looking for.
So what course would the one day one be sufficient for me? If I sat a one day course with you, I could then be the person in my business to do the checks? Or would you say that you need a longer course to be that person?
No, there is a specific course just for appointed person, potentially a shorter course than that, and it's their sole job is to go around checking the equipment and so on. But in that case, we just tend to tell people, if you just sit the one-day course itself or the three-day course, that will then give you the information that the appointed person would have done anyway.
Okay, so you could just sit in appointed persons?
Yeah, and it basically just goes through everything we're discussing now, and to be fair, it goes through the course contents and first aid kit rooms.
Fab. Well, is there anything that you would like to add that I haven't asked any questions about that you think is important that people understand about this regulation?
No. The only thing I'd like to add is people just please be aware when you're booking courses that those courses are fit and adequate for your place of work. You know, that's the biggest theme that we're seeing. Thinking the person that's just on a one-day course, thinking it's enough, is not always enough. You need to be doing more it's a very big common theme in the industry.
And do you know if it's a common thing for businesses or individuals to be prosecuted for failing to comply with the first aid regs?
There has been some prosecutions. Not providing the adequate facilities in the workplace is one. I believe there's one nearby, currently being investigated for that reason in North Wales.
And is that the kind of thing, is that being picked up on just a spot check visit, or is that once someone's been hurt, the HSE go in to investigate and then find out the failings, or do you think both?
I think both, but more so the case, hindsight's a beautiful thing. It's usually after the event that we tend to find. But again, there have been both. And it's a massive problem for us. I mean, we've got lads doing courses, construction workers and farmers, sitting the one-day course, operating heavy machinery, when really they should be looking at doing the three-day, and they're actually operating a machine like an anvil grinder, wearing eye protection, but don't have the qualification that covers them under the eye protection. So if you're not competent, i.e. you've not sat the three-day course, and you treat someone with an eye injury, having not sat the competent course, you are liable to, of course, further injury and liable for a case.
Well, as an individual?
Absolutely, yeah, of course, yeah.
So it's important, I guess, that you know that you're going on the right course. It's not just down to an employer. You need to make sure that you're covered as well if you're actually treating someone.
Well, absolutely, yeah. You're looking at Section 3 of the Health and Safety Act, the duty to yourself and others. You've got a duty to that person as well as yourself. And if you knowingly treat an individual that you're not qualified to do so or within dates to do so, i.e. an eye injury, even on the one day, then you're open up for prosecution yourself if the person was used to cause further injury to that person.
Another reason why I say to people, you don't have to be in the health and safety team to have to take health and safety seriously. You need to understand what you can do, what you can't do, and make sure that you're highlighting things. If you recognise that your employer is putting everyone on a one day but potentially you could be dealing with a life-threatening bleed, actually highlighting that you don't think that you've been trained sufficiently.
Absolutely. We're currently in contact with Construction CCITB at the minute and the National Plant MPORs about potentially changing the curriculum around first aid on their site managers' courses, as an example. It's difficult to do this, but we are massively recommending that site managers and site supervisors within the construction trade are a minimum of 3 day first aid qualified, because they are the people who are, at the end of the day, their name above the door, and it's there, guys on the ground. It's difficult to put that through your suspension.
I would just look at that and think, why would you ever not think that that's the right thing to do? But I guess not everybody knows, hence why, we have the podcast so that people can listen and get themselves up to date. But you can't know everything either, right? So we can't just assume that everyone should know this stuff. And it's important to actually find out what we need to know and how to protect ourselves. So just remind us again, what's your company called?
It's Shawcliffe Training in North Wales, Denby.
And do you run courses where people can come to your venue, but you also go out to theirs as well?
Absolutely, yeah, we run both. We do more markets to come down. We run first aid courses 1 day, 3 day, and anything else in between regularly in our place. And we also come to site and train. Actually, one tomorrow, but on off-site tomorrow.
I do like a site course. Get you out and about every now
Absolutely
and then.
Absolutely, love it. Yeah, loads of faith, bud.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much for talking us through the first aid regulations. And I know for a fact that there will be at least one person that listens and goes, I never knew that, and actually that will change things. So I appreciate your time for coming on and sharing your knowledge. And if anybody is looking at upgrading training or just getting training, then they can give you a call and find out what you've got on offer. Thank you so much. It was lovely to speak to you.
No worries at all. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ashley. Bye.